Welcome to the Implementation Podcast. I'm Kiernan McGowan.
I'm Raveen Kumar.
And today we're going to talk about the practical uses of 3D printing.
Raveen,
you're the manufacturing person of this duo. Do you want to... I mean, you're more manufacturing than me, I guess.
That's true. I mean, your dad does manufacturing, but I guess I do manufacturing as a job.
Yep. So, do you want to give us a quick overview of what 3D printing is and how it differs from how anything else is created in the world today?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Tim, especially because 3D printing seems to have gotten in the mainstream media as of late, and it's mentioned in places like Facebook or BuzzFeed, oddly enough. But 3D printing is, in manufacturing terms, is actually called additive manufacturing, and... the best way to describe it is to describe its converse, which is subtractive manufacturing. And those sound like fancy terms, but really, all subtractive manufacturing is what you kind of think of when we think about manufacturing. A lot of times it's like with metalworking, you're taking a piece of material and then you're removing pieces of it, like on a mill or a lathe. That's sort of the things you kind of see in movies. 3D printing is the opposite. What it is you start with nothing. And then you start adding material until you get the shape you want. And 3D printing is technically not super new. I mean, if you look at welding, that's technically a form of additive manufacturing where you're adding material together. But 3D printing became super useful recently because of, as if with almost everything else, because of computers. And it made it really cheap and easy for computers to make these intricate shapes where previously it would require a human to perform the manufacturing steps.
Yeah, and the prices of these things have started to drop a lot in the recent years. Like, even though a grand still sounds like a lot, I could spend $1,000 and have a 3D printer in my living room, whereas traditionally if I wanted to have a complex manufacturing tool, I'd have to spend upwards of 10 grand, probably closer to 50 grand, right?
Yeah, I mean, so you hit a nail on the head right there. 3D printing is small enough and cheap enough for people to access. And that sort of happened for two reasons. From a physics standpoint, mills and lathes have been around for almost 100 years now. And they're still not usually small enough to be in people's houses. There's a few exceptions here and there just because of the physics behind it. It's just when you're removing metal from a hard object, it just takes a lot of force. So you have to have these really big and bulky machines that are stronger than the piece of metal you're cutting on. But with 3D printing, it's kind of great because there's no forces at all. Because you're adding in home 3D printing's case, you're adding melted plastic. The machines can be really light and small because they don't have to take a lot of physical force. Another thing that happened, though, is 3D printers also used to be really large and expensive. So 3D printing has been around since the 80s, but it used to take these really big refrigerator-sized machines to melt the plastic and put it on and have all the controls. But over time, just like all other electronics have been miniaturized, people have figured out how to miniaturize 3D printers as well. So they're both small enough to fit on a standard coffee table, and because they're smaller, they're also just cheaper to ship and put in regular stores like Home Depots or Radio Shacks or what have you.
So is that like the reason for the shrinkage? Was that like a materials thing? Like we were able to find plastics that didn't require a massive heating element? Or was it just everything else that required to be manufactured to build the thing?
I think it's just...
got smaller.
No, it's a good question. I'm going to speculate a little bit here, but I initial 3D printers, from my experience with them, were purpose built for manufacturing companies, and manufacturing companies tend to want things like quick prints and high resolution, and they're also used to getting large bulky machines. I don't think there was that much of an impetus to make them a lot smaller, but I don't exactly know what, but somewhere around the mid 2000s. This is an interesting movement, actually. The MakerBot company used to be this open source hacker friendly movement where people would be making 3D printers in their house. So they would be making a very different type of 3D printer. It would be not as high resolution. It'd be less precise, but it would be small and cheap. So hobbyists could make it in their spare time after they came home from work, or high schoolers could make it with you know, the dollars they saved up from their jobs. And the printers weren't very good, but the printers started getting better and better and better. And at some point, people started realizing that we could sell these things. So there kind of became, there was this big drama that happened in the 3D printing world at the beginning of the 2000s, where MakerBot went from being this kind of scrappy open source hacker movement, and they took those designs and commercialized them and made them closed source and became more of a traditional company that was selling a device. And now this caused a huge schism in the 3D printing community, because you had large companies like Stratasys who were catering to companies that could afford $100,000 printers, and you had this cheap open source movement so people could tinker with their stuff. And now this company started selling these sub $1,000 printers, but was closed sourcing them. But it did kick off sort of this small 3D printing industry, where people expected to have 3D, people could sell to other people who were going to buy 3D printers that fit in their house. And I think that's how 3D printers became small. It's just plain economics.
It was more of a hobbyist approach. It was a bottom up, like with the hobbyists building them and selling them, as opposed to like a top down approach from the manufacturing perspective.
Yeah, I think hobbyist turned commercialized.
And it's also kind of funny to hear that even the hardware space isn't immune from the open source world problems of like open source liberty, freedom of speech, all that jive, which we're not going to try and get into right now.
That's a whole other podcast.
Oh my God. It's just, people get really up in arms about it, and it's just a rabbit hole I don't want to go down.
Yeah, fair enough.
So cool. So I've only seen 3D printers, like the ones that sit on my tabletop, be able to make like a cup or like some little ornament. And as a result, I don't actually see a whole lot of personal use for them. Like, how are they used in manufacturing at large? Like in ways that I wouldn't see as a normal consumer.
Yeah, excellent question there too. I think you sort of alluded to another topic of how useful are 3D printers actually. So, I mean, recording this in 2018, where I think we're a little bit past the 3D printer hype cycle, but I mean, I just 3 or 4 years ago, I just remember seeing everywhere on the news and websites of how 3D printing was just going to take over manufacturing, and you wouldn't have to buy stuff from Amazon with 2-day shipping anymore. You could just print stuff at your home and have it instantly by downloading a file. I mean, there was this whole 3D printed gun, which sparked a whole bunch of controversy as well.
But yeah, the Pirate Bay started to host like a 3D printed section, and I think like Lego maybe freaked out because they were opening up Lego pieces for people to download and print on their own.
Yeah, you're right. All this stuff was going on, like, I think, in the 2014, 2015 thing. But it goes to this root issue of how useful is 3D printing. And as you may guess now, because it's sort of fallen off the hype cycle, home 3D printing turned out to be not as useful as people thought it was. And the root of that has to do with the way 3D printers work themselves. So there's actually three types of 3D printers. There's one called FDM, which is fused deposition molding, I believe. Fused deposition, and I'm slipping on what the M means right now. But it's a type of 3D printing that is in home 3D printers. You take a long spool of plastic and you melt it into a shape. And it's essentially a fancy hot glue gun hooked up to a numeric machine. When I mean numeric machine, I mean a very precise robot controlled by a computer. Mm-hmm. And so this technology works at home because it requires very low energy. You can plug it into a 120 watt machine. It's very safe for people to use because the plastic is safe. But you're limited to a couple types of plastic. It's usually ABS or PLA plastic. So, I mean, you really can't print anything else besides stuff that's made out of ABS and PLA. So that takes out making like spatulas or robust iPhone cases, or, if you look around you right now, especially, I'm going to guess you as well, Tim, I'm looking around in my place, there's not a lot of stuff that is made out of ABS and PLA. They're made out of different types of plastic. It's made out of wood. It's made out of metal. And home 3D printers can't do that. Now, that leads us to, there's two other types of 3D printers. There's ones that are called SLA, and they're called stereolithography 3D printers. And what happens is they take a vat of goo, and a laser comes down, and where the laser shines, it cures this plastic. So instead of a spool of plastic coming out, you essentially start with a liquid bath, and a laser or ultraviolet light will harden the plastic. There is one company called Form Labs that sells this type of 3D printer for home use, but it's not very popular because the liquid is very expensive and it gets everywhere and it's pretty toxic. So not something that a lot of people want sitting in their homes, a whole vat of this gooey liquid. So not ideal for regular consumers, but has some uses in industry. Now, again, it's not replaced a whole lot because you can't print anything other than this one type of plastic. Now, the very last bit, and this is actually the most intriguing for me as a professional industrial type of guy who works in machine shops and fabrication places, is this last one called SLS. And this is called selective laser sintering. The way selective laser sintering works is you have a very fine layer of powdered, it could be plastic or it could be metal, just a powdered material. And what you do is you run a laser over the powdered material, and where the laser runs, it'll ever so slightly melt the material together. And then once you have one layer melted, you roll another very fine layer of material, and then you melt another layer. And by creating thousands of these cross sections, you actually end up making a very complex shape. Now, this version of 3D printing is very interesting for manufacturing type folks, because you can make shapes out of metallics and different types of plastics. And metallics like titanium, aluminum, actually not aluminum, titanium and steel, and a couple other very exotic metals. So if you're a professional manufacturer, what this means is you can make really complex shapes, and you can make them more cheaply than you can with some types of milling or turning types of manufacturing. And so we're really interested in it as professionals, but SLS is not very good for home use because, one, it's super power hungry. It requires like industrial sized lasers. So very few people have like a 480 volt.
You mean you don't want to have a massive industrial laser in your kitchen?
Well, you know, I personally want a massive industrial laser in my kitchen, but my SoCal Edison, who's my electricity provider, probably does not want to provide me 480 power to my residential zoned house. I don't quite have a 10,000 volt electrical substation right next to my residence, as much as I would like one.
Where do our tax dollars go? Come on.
The other thing though that I don't want is I don't want my brother and my mom and everyone to be breathing in this ultra fine, really toxic dust. So as fun as really fine metals are for the manufacturer, they are not fun for doctors or people that are trying to keep this stuff out of your lungs. So not right. Exactly the thing you want to be shipping around or having your kids kind of playing around with. It's really fun. It looks like glitter until it causes you health problems.
Well, that's no good. So it's probably a good thing we're keeping that in the manufacturing space for now. So I guess this gets back to the question I've had all along, which is, we're able to make these kind of impossible shapes, and we're able to do it with materials that are starting to get close to what we're able to use with normal manufacturing. But how, like, would a company use 3D printing today in their manufacturing pipeline?
So modern companies use 3D printing as just yet another option for them to make shapes. So it's important to point out that 3D printing still isn't like the holy grail of technologies. It's not this... I forgot what the Star Trek thing was, but it like there's some. I remember in Star Trek, there's like you push a button and this microwave looking thing just makes a something appear out of thin air. 3D printing is not that. 3D printing still is very limited to a couple types of materials and a couple types of shapes. But so what it really is good at is one-off shapes that are very, very complex in design. too complex that you couldn't carve it out of a single block of steel. So a good example is it's really hard to make a sphere, like a ball with holes in it through traditional cutting, because it's really hard to cut the inside of an object. It's easy to cut the outside of things, but cutting the inside just requires all sorts of magic, and sometimes it's impossible. But with 3D printing, you don't have that problem because you can make things in layers. You don't have to start with a big block of material. So for professional manufacturers, it opens up the idea of making complex shapes super, super efficiently. But it is important to note that it still takes 10 to 100 times longer than subtractive manufacturing or injection molding. So injection molding, for example, to make a toothbrush, it takes literally like 1 second worth of time. And that is a long time for companies. Some plastics are made in literally like a quarter of a second or half a second, like small Hot Wheels cars. In contrast, 3D printing a Hot Wheels car, where it would take like a second or 2 seconds through injection metal molding, 3D printing will take like 10 to 20 hours minimum. It's orders, two or three orders of magnitude longer. So there is still a trade-off and a consideration to be made. It's not the go-to option always.
Right, but the advantage with that is that you don't need to put in the investment to create the die or the mold, which is the expensive part of the manufacturing process.
Exactly. So it's the trade-off. It's a classic trade-off between, if I'm making a one-off of something, how much do I invest in tooling and all that? So if I'm only making one Hot Wheels car, then yeah, 3D printing all the way. I can wait 20 hours and not put down the $20,000 or $30,000 it takes to make a mold. But if I'm churning out Hot Wheels cars and I'm making hundreds of thousands for the holiday rush and to sell on Amazon or wherever else, then it is well worth to make the capital investment of $30,000 to $40,000 up front and then start printing these things by the hundreds, or sorry, start injection molding these things by the hundreds and recoup your costs over time. So it very much then becomes a capability decision. Is it even possible to do in other older methods? And if it isn't, then of course use 3D printing. But if it is possible, then it becomes a cost trade-off in terms of the volume of parts you're going to make and your product and how long you can wait to market and those sort of more business type and objectives.
It also, I'm assuming, opens up like a lot of space for prototyping and revisions of a product until you want to narrow in on what you're going to make the die out of, right?
Exactly. So that is one place that it's being used extensively. I would say even by home entrepreneurs, is it's very cheap now to make a physical prototype of a shape to see how things fit together, how a product feels, what the size is, and then eventually turn that into a production run of whatever the thing you might be making is.
Totally. Makes perfect sense. So I have one last question, and then I guess we can wrap it up from there. But the thing that I see is really interesting about 3D printing is that kind of what you mentioned at the very beginning of all this is that it's safe enough to be able to theoretically sit inside of someone's home kitchen. And this is getting a little wild, but is there any use case for 3D printing with space travel and space exploration? Such that, say, something could be manufactured in a safe way on a spaceship?
This is going to be really interesting. I'm failing to recall whether we've sent a 3D printer up into space or not. There is renewed interest in how we can do manufacturing in different environments other than Earth. 3D printing perhaps may be a candidate. Now, from my professional experience, 3D printing is heavily reliant on there being gravity. So I'm not entirely sure
if that powder starts to float around, it's not super useful.
No, or the plastic won't settle down in traditional 3D printing. But for 3D printing, for instance, would be particularly good for space travel because you don't have to bring up a whole bunch of metal and then cut it down. You only need to bring up the material that you're actually going to use. So, I mean, interesting question, but I unfortunately this is a little bit past my expertise.
Yeah, it sounds like it hasn't advanced enough to be able to break into, I don't know, our level of knowledge, it sounds like.
Yeah, I don't know how many experiments have been run.
Well, one of these days I'm hoping for 3D printing to live up to the hype of, 5 years ago?
Hey, well,
and maybe.
The next time you go to space, just bring one up with you in your lap. and test it out, see how it goes.
Yeah, I can't wait to holiday on Mars, right?
Yep, exactly.
Maybe we'll be this bored by blockchain in about 5 years.
Yeah, imagine that. 5 years from
All
now, the
right.
podcast record.
Well, cool. Thanks for listening to our first episode of the Implementation Podcast. We'd love any feedback that you can give us as we try and explore if this is a topic that people want to keep exploring. Our thesis with all this is just trying to give a view of how technology can be used in industry and how it is being used without the marketing nonsense that you see gracing the headlines every day. So we're cynical engineers with hope, if that can even exist. So thanks a lot. I'm Kieran McGowan.
I'm Ravi.
And we'll talk to you next week.
See y'all.